Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good evening to you.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm a bit unaccustomed to doing this podcast at 8 o'clock of a Monday evening. I thought, you know, you were unable to do it the usual time this morning, and I thought, you know what, that might actually be quite good because maybe something will happen during the day. There'd be some excitement, some news, but really not much has.
We're on the precipice of things happening, aren't we?
I think so. We're just waiting for, I don't know, dominoes to fall or just shit to happen, I guess.
Fax machine. It's usually fax machines, isn't it?
I think so. They still use those these days?
They insist. They absolutely insist.
That's your next video. Why football clubs use fax machines in this day and age?
I'll give you a really lengthy rational explanation as to why that is.
Yeah.
The default choice of technology. No, it is a weird thing. It's kind of like, it's as if we are excitedly awaiting the good news, but the good news remains tantalizingly out of reach.
It's like a load of Christmas Eves in a row if you're a kid.
Yeah.
You wake up, it's Christmas Eve, it's going to be Christmas tomorrow. And then you wake up again. It's like sort of Groundhog Day for football transfers crossed with like Christmas Eve. I'm struggling with this one.
It's Christmas Eve day.
Correct.
The Groundhog.
Go on.
Well, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm the crumbs that exist, I'm attempting to sort of gather them into a morsel. I saw some news this evening about Granit Xhaka.
Correct.
Being close to his move. I mean, he's been close forever, such a long time. But we know he doesn't move quickly at the best of times, Granit.
Mm.
And yes, lots of seemingly quite reliable reporting that he's close to a transfer for the fee of 25 million euros. So my pleas were heard.
They were. Someone listened to the podcast and said, you know what, just to make James's life a little bit better, we should get more money for Granit Xhaka. We'll insist on some more cash. And that
It was Leverkusen. They were listening and thought, that guy seems really a little bit perturbed by how cheaply we're buying Granit Xhaka for.
I heard Xabi Alonso insisted.
Really? On the extra 10 million euros?
Yeah, he insisted. I read it on somebody's Twitter, I think. Xabi Alonso insists on paying more for Granit Xhaka as Granit Xhaka edges closer to his move to Bayer Leverkusen. So
it is a concrete possibility that he may join Granit Leverkusen this summer. I mean, I do feel a bit better about that. Do you think? I mean, that seems more correct.
It seems more aligned with the market that we are operating in when we're buying players. Yeah, that you know we always seem to be charged top dollar for whoever it is that we're after, but when it comes to getting top dollar for our own players, that's been a bit of a struggle, it has to be said. So I think it is, just in general terms, more in line with some of the prices that we're seeing this summer for players, you know, regardless of where they're going. I just saw a story about Burnley buying a Manchester City child. A child for £15 million, maybe going up as far as £19 million with add-ons. He's a goalkeeper called
James Trafford.
James Trafford. I mean, there's
19 million British pounds.
I mean, who is James Trafford?
He spent the season last season on loan at Bolton, which I think we can all agree is the perfect preparation for playing for Burnley.
Correct. He was born in Cockermouth.
Sorry? I beg your pardon?
He was born in Cockermouth.
Oh, right. That's much better.
Mm. He's 6 foot six and he's 20 years of age. Excuse me.
Don't worry, it can be hard to talk with Cockermouth sometimes.
So, yeah, that was pure coincidence when I said Cockermouth. I just had a little frog in my throat. I mean, that's extraordinary. You know,
that's mad.
I think, yes, that's good money for Granit Xhaka now, or certainly better money for Granit Xhaka. Acceptable money for Granit Xhaka, I think it's fair to say. But we sold Bernd Leno for 28p last year.
Mad. That's like, I'm just going to pick a player from our academy. That's like us saying we're going to sell Ovi Ejaheri for like 15 million quid. Imagine, we'd be dancing in the streets of Dublin and Muswell Hill, respectively.
It's a bit mad. How do these clubs do it?
12 million guaranteed for a goalkeeper.
Who's 20? From Cockermouth.
Maybe it's just the novelty value of the name, the place name. I don't know. That is extraordinary.
Mm.
Well, listen, personally, I feel like Granit Xhaka, I still believe, should cost comfortably more than Cockermouth Boy.
Right, yes. So
I would like even more money, but if that's the going rate. But I feel a little bit more at peace with this deal.
Yeah. Maybe Xabi Alonso is listening again and he'll think, oh, Jesus.
I hope so. If you listened last week, why would you not listen this week? It was a banger of a show.
If old Cockermouth is going for 15 million, we're going to have to pay a bit more to keep James happy on the Granit Xhaka thing. But, I mean, do you think that that deal has been on hold because Arsenal have been trying to negotiate upwards? I mean, it's possible. Or, you know, is it a case that it's been on hold until we've been absolutely sure of doing the, you know, the deal, the big deal that we wanted to do? Or is it a combination of all of those things, maybe?
Probably a little bit of both. I did hear that Granit had been told, look, we're not going to do this until we get somebody in. And I think Granit being Granit, he was a little bit grumpy about that because he wanted it all tied up before the end of the season. He wanted to say, oh, by the way, guys, I'm going before what would be his farewell game. But, you know, Arsenal wanted to get their ducks in a row, and if they've got a bit more money out of it as well, then that's great. I mean, something tells me that this might be one of those deals where in England it's reported as this fee and in Germany it's a few million lower, and I guess we'll never really know kind of what the exact structure of the fee is going to be and what he has to do with Leverkusen for it to max out around that £21 million. But listen, it's better than I feared, so I am pleased with that. Even if I still harbour my concerns about not about letting him go. It's the right thing to do to sell him. It's just that he was very good. That's all.
Okay. Well, look, I think we can acknowledge that he was very good, but also the fact that it is the right time to sell him. I think you're right there. And I think that's the thing. When you start getting good as a team, you've got to get rid of players who are good to, you know, to move on and develop and evolve and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Like, how many podcasts did we do sitting here going, oh God, can we not just get rid of that guy? Can we not just send him away?
Yeah.
You know, why is that guy still
here? Non-specific. You're not thinking of a particular player.
I'm not thinking of any. No, I'm not. I won't dignify that with a with a response. I just mean that there were many times that we sat here and we bemoaned the fact that we just could not get rid of players who, you know, frustrated us. And now we're in a different situation. We're in a different ballpark. It's nicer. We're going, yeah, it's good. It's the right thing to sell. The money's okay. But it's easier, or not as easy, you know, to say goodbye to somebody who's given you, you know, pretty good moments in the last couple of seasons. So
no, and also it's just, you know, it's a classic kind of I suppose conservative way of thinking, but it's sort of the certainty of something you know versus the uncertainty of something you don't, especially because it looks like we might be replacing Granit Xhaka in some way, shape or form with Kai Havertz. And it's such an unknowable, really, how he'll do in that role. And listen, that's one of the most exciting things about next season and could be a massive step forward for the team.
Yeah.
But we're just sort of feeling in the dark a little bit there.
Do you think we're going to get a piece of content from Granit Xhaka? Will it be just like a message on his Instagram, or do you think, you know, he might want to make
they'll do a little video, you know, like the Aaron Ramsdale new contract one, where he walked out and sat down in the chair very solemnly, and I genuinely feared he was going to tell us he was dying or something. It was incredibly serious. I think we'll get something like that.
Yeah, I think so too, probably.
It'll be like, you know, we haven't always got along. We certainly had our moments, cut to, you know, Crystal Palace and the booing off. But I feel that we understand each other and now we are family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could write this, to be honest.
Yes, I'm sure somebody will.
Slightly distorted delivery as he's reading it off a prompter, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's probably in the region of what we're going to get, for sure.
And I'll retweet it. I'll lap it up. I'll enjoy it.
You might retweet it. Depends if Twitter works or not. You just don't
know.
Are
you finding all that?
Couldn't give a fuck. No. It's, I mean, let's not. Let's not get into it. So that's really
the Discord.
Discord. We've got the Discord, and the Discord is good. If I've fucking completely forgotten what I was going to say there.
Don't worry, Granit Xhaka.
Granit Xhaka, yeah, that was about video. It. That was about the only thing that happened today. I do feel like it is going to get busier as the week goes on. I'm not hinting at anything. I just feel like that.
Yeah, I saw there was a sort of internet conspiracy theory. My mate Tom pointed it out to me. Certain days of the Arsenal tour have been cancelled this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. This is great kind of ITK stuff. Congratulations to the Arsenal fans for turning this up. But yeah, I think...
Is it a complete days, or are there just certain times on days?
Hang on, let's have a look. Well, I originally heard there were 2 days, and then he sent me a screen grab which only said 1 day. Some route closures. Stadium tours will close at 1 p.m. on the 3rd of July. That was today. Due to club activity.
Oh, I know what that was. I don't think we can say. But I know what it was.
And there was some talk of that again happening later in the week.
Yeah.
Listen, who knows?
Who knows?
So I think we are close to things happening. Not as close as you might like.
Mm.
Like the Declan Rice one. I was over the weekend. There were a few little bits and pieces I heard that made me think, oh, that might happen really early next week.
Mm.
And now I think actually it's going to be later than that. But nothing to worry anybody. Like, I don't get the sense that there's any great jeopardy at this point in time.
Just chill out, guys. It'll be all done in August.
To have their holidays at the end of the day.
Just Christmas Eve after Christmas Eve after Christmas Eve. And then one day it will be Christmas Day.
Well, the thing is, when it is Christmas, do you know what I mean? And they parade timber and rice. It's like Christmas Day. You know, when you've given all the presents and there's sort of the wreckage of wrapping paper everywhere.
Sure.
And you're sat in that pile of sort of commercialism. You feel a little bit like sick that you've partaken in this kind of capitalist idea of the festive season.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel as good as you think. Christmas Eve's the best bit. This is when we should be at our happiest.
That's a really good point. Christmas Day gets increasingly underwhelming as you get older as well, you know.
That's true.
But it's all ahead of you, of course. You're going to have lots of fun Christmas days with a new guy who's going to be excited by the whole thing.
He won't, he'll be thrilled. He'll be thrilled about the entire concept.
What did you get me for Christmas, Daddy? I got you Declan Rice.
Be a hell of a present.
It would.
Big box with a bow.
Amazing. Don't forget to put some holes in it, though. You don't want him opening it up and just this...
I think that what you'd do is you'd fill the box with grains of rice. And he'd open it and he'd be like, what'd you get me? And they'd be like, Dad, this is just uncooked rice. And then you'd be like, keep digging. And then eventually he finds a hand. It's like, what?
It's bluer than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Oh, no, this has gone terribly wrong. You'll never pass the medical in this state.
Yeah.
But, it is a kind of curious in-between transfer purgatory in which we currently exist.
So we might as well just do some random questions in order to find things to talk about while we're on this. Jasmine Declan Basmati Rice says, what's your favorite rice dish?
I'm going to say kedgeri.
I don't know that.
Really?
What is that?
It's like a sort of colonialist nightmare of a dish. It's, I think it dates from like the Raj, but it's essentially a breakfast dish of rice, smoked haddock.
Right.
And egg. But it's a lovely breakfast.
I have never had that or heard of it. Yeah.
Or encountered it.
No. No, I haven't.
I love it. It's great. I think it's not something you come across all the time, but I do like it.
I think that could be a bit much for me for breakfast, to be honest.
What's your favourite rice dish? It's not that easy, you see.
I tell you what,
Do
you know what I did one night? I was sitting at home and we were watching some kind of food show. And there was this guy, little tattoo-y chef, I can't remember his name, but he used to hang around with Bourdain a bit and stuff like that. And he talked about this, I think, did they call it like an heirloom rice, where they sort of brought back a variation of rice that had been almost extinct. They called it Carolina Gold. That's the Carolina Gold rice. And what they were making with it looked delicious, right? Amazing. Now, I'd had a couple of drinks. A couple of weeks later, a fucking very heavy package arrives at the house, which is like 7 kilos of this rice transported from America to Ireland. It cost...
I better check. Did you dig deeper in the rice?
Did find a hand, but let's not go into it. So it cost as much to send the rice as the rice cost itself, and it was outrageously expensive. But they have a recipe thing on their website where you get the rice from, where you make sort of crab with the rice with peppers and what's that Madeira wine, kind of a sweet wine. Okay. And you mix the rice up and mix the crab up, but then you sort of sear the rice on the bottom so it becomes this lovely, crunchy, crispy kind of blackened rice on the bottom, but you have this amazingly moist crab dish underneath or on top or whichever way it works. So that would be my favorite rice dish.
I mean, listen, you know, we've both spent some time in Spain. You can't dismiss paella from this conversation.
No, you can't. Good paella is always good. And did you see the players were back today, actually? They were back.
Yeah, I did see that. I saw a picture of Mikel Arteta looking
What's
stern.
Going on? What's going on with his hair? It looks, am I imagining it, or is he beginning to get a bit of grey?
I think maybe the run-in may finally have seen the immaculate blackness of his hair compromised.
I mean, there are things he can do, you know?
Yeah, be interesting to see if he takes that step.
Or becomes a silver fox.
There are some definite flex.
Mm-hmm. Could be the sunshine. Sure. Could be the sunshine, maybe.
Bit of salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he looks worse for it, though. I think he rocks it.
Yeah.
Listen, as a man with no hair, I think grey hair looks fantastic. If you offer me grey hair tomorrow, I'm shaking your hand on that deal. Who was back then? So people who weren't involved in internationals.
Ben White was back.
Yeah.
Ben was
the
there.
Arsenal photographers have been enjoying Ben White.
Of course. I mean, how could you not? Rob Holding was there.
Of course.
Cedric was there. Cedric always finds a way.
Of course.
Marquinhos.
Gabriel Jesus.
Trossard. Yeah, I'm just having a flick through here. Eddie's there. A lot of Ben White.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of Marquinhos as well.
I mean, it looks like they were mainly doing, you know, sort of assessments.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like, let's see if you can still jump high.
Can you run anymore?
Yeah. Did you spend your few weeks off ingesting the world's best rice dishes? But they all look smiley and happy.
Why? Cedric was, you know, got the old, what are they doing there? EKG or something? Looking at the pictures. They've got him. Yeah, it must be.
Hooked up to something.
Hooked up to something. Seeing if they can actually
resuscitate his Arsenal career.
Extract the value from him with little mining tools or something.
Yeah. Well, interesting one, Cedric. He went to Fulham, right, on loan. And basically, they promised him he was going to play. And he very much didn't play.
No.
I don't know if you noticed that, but he had his old manager, Marcos Silva. And it was basically a disaster of a loan move for him. Where?
When did he work with Marco Silva?
In Portugal.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that would make sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think they knew each other. I think I'm pretty sure he played under him. Anyway, it was like, come and play for me, your old buddy, your old pal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use you. And lo and behold, they did not use him.
He used him like an old dish rag.
Exactly. So he wasn't best pleased about that, I don't think, and would frankly rather have been at Arsenal for that period. So,
Well, he wouldn't have played here.
With us. But Tommy Asu did, you know, go out for the season, and as did Saliba. I don't think he would have played, but he might have, you know, been involved.
I mean, do the people who hang around outside the training ground, would you say they're involved?
They're involved in a way.
They're certainly involved.
they're involved. They're good for morale, experience. Anyway, I think he'll think quite carefully about his next move because he'll be 32 on transfer deadline day, I think. He's 31st of August.
Right.
I don't know if that is transfer deadline day, but it's got to be in that ballpark.
Yeah.
So this is probably it for him, his next move, in terms of being like a contributor somewhere.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a, you know, a downward move, it would be fair to say.
You would think. You would think, unless something quite extraordinary happens.
Is this going to be another one of those where, you know, it's sort of like, here, just take this. Don't say it to anyone. Just, you know, you can go now. And it's a, you know.
A little bag of money.
Little bag of money and a carriage clock.
Sure.
Dear Cedric, thanks for everything. Love
Arsenal. Thanks for all the memories.
But it's time to say goodbye.
What's transfer market saying? We gave him like a 10-year deal, didn't we? We
gave him a long deal, all right.
So yeah, next summer he expires.
Oh, poor guy. That's not. His contract expires. Oh, sorry.
He'll probably be thinking, well, I will collect this wage unless I'm told otherwise. And who knows? I mean, listen, if someone comes in for him, obviously Arsenal will be amenable. They're literally trying to buy a right back right now. But at that age, with a high salary, I don't know. I don't think there's going to be a ton of. I don't think the competition is going to be intense.
No.
With the greatest of respect.
Maybe a move back to Portugal?
Yes, that feels plausible.
Yeah. Which is one of those where you're not going to get a big fee from a Portuguese club and you're probably going to have to give him his wages to get him out the door. So.
I don't think we're going to make a ton of money on it. That's for sure.
No sign of Nicolas Pepe today. I don't know if he was involved in summer internationals, if that's why he wasn't there. But there's another one, another guy with a year left on his deal.
What do you think is going to happen there?
Again, I think it could be I made a question about it, actually. Let me see if I could find it. I can't, actually. Okay, yeah, it comes from Tom on the Discord. He says, hi, do you see a way for Pepe to be part of the squad next season? I get that he has been a major bust, but if nobody will take on his wages, isn't it better to keep an experienced and somewhat capable winger in the squad for Carabao Cup, early FA Cup, mop-up duty. I think he means mop-up duty, unless Pepe is, you know, heavily involved with organized crime. I don't think it's mop-up, but would that be better?
That's just the deal.
Would that be better than paying him to leave? Do you see any way that he might feature in the squad next season under Mikel Arteta?
Honestly, no. I really don't. Mm. I would be amazed. I see all the logical reasons of he's difficult to move on. We could maybe do with one more attacker in the mix. He's on a high salary. Who's going to take him? I completely understand all the points. We've had a couple of questions like that. I just can't see Mikel Arteta using him in any way. Mm. I find it very, very hard to imagine.
Same. I always think of that moment in the away game against Aston Villa, where he brought Pepe on, I think. It was the one where Bernd Leno was playing in goal. Do you remember?
I do.
And he brought Pepe on, and the minute he brought him on, he was like cajoling him, and I'm being diplomatic here, you know, up and down the touchline. And then he gave away a really dangerous free kick really late in the game.
Yeah, I think that was the free kick perhaps that Leno made the save.
He did, yeah. But it reminded me of that bit in The Simpsons where Lisa tells Ralph Wiggum that he doesn't want to, or she doesn't want to be his Valentine. And it's that one, you can see the moment that his heart breaks. And Ralph is like, arr. But that's the moment where I think Mikel Arteta just, that was his moment with Pepe, where he went, no, I can't. Whatever it is, I'm not having what this guy's given me. So I would be absolutely amazed.
Yeah. I just.
But where does he go? Where does he go?
France. Or Nottingham Forest or something.
Nottingham Forest.
They'll buy anybody.
Yeah. They'll buy another 22 players this summer.
The Saudi League?
Maybe.
Do you have any reservations about Arsenal doing that? Like, do you feel any conflict about, you know, we've had big debates about sports washing and the influx of Saudi money into the Premier League. But if Arsenal were to turn around and say, like, we've sold Pepe for 20 million, would there be any sort of shred of conflict within you?
No. I don't think so. No. I don't
just
think
laughing
so.
All the way to the bank, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. You know, you'd be foolish not to take the money if it was on offer, because everybody else is going to take the money if it's on offer for players that they no longer want.
Of course.
You know, so I'm not sure too many football clubs can take the moral high ground on anything anyway.
Sure.
So I wouldn't expect Arsenal to turn that down.
I sort of slightly feel these Saudi deals appear to be a bit more about who you know. And I'm not necessarily sure that Arsenal have quite the same connections as certain other Premier League clubs do to make those deals happen. But it'd be very welcome if they did.
Yeah. Yeah. No sign of Reece Nelson, who is now completely out of contract?
He's gone AWOL.
Has he?
No, I just mean, you know, he's a free agent now.
Well, I mean, he is.
He literally is.
Does that preclude him from training with the club until such time as something is arranged or not arranged? It must, right?
That's a very good question.
There's probably insurance, and like, what happens if he comes to training and, you know, slips on one of Ben White's flip-flops, injures himself in the workplace, but you're not even supposed to be here. You don't have a contract. This is your fault.
I don't know. I do know that when he signs his contract, it will almost certainly be backdated. So he'll be paid from the expiry of his previous deal.
Mm-hmm.
So he won't go out of pocket for this period.
Well, I wasn't that worried about that. you know.
Sure. I mean, footballers rarely do. I don't know about the legality of if he can train. It's a really interesting question. Let's find out. Yeah, it is a curious one. He's not a complete anomaly, as we talked about last week. There are, you know, it does happen, and it happens more often down the leagues, I have to say, where you know, contracts do tend to go closer to the end and there's a bit more uncertainty about who you're going to be able to pay next season. It's not that unusual to get to the summer in the lower divisions for a club to then make calls, you know, and it may be that they go beyond the expiry. But yeah, it's not a regular occurrence at the top level.
Yeah, it is a strange one. I can't really remember it happening at Arsenal before.
No.
So we'll see what happens.
Dennis Bergkamp, who would run his like very close to the wire, it would always be done, I think, before the end of the season.
For sure. As you know, he'd put in one of those performances and everyone's chanting one more year. I mean, I think this is just an interesting one anyway, because I know that some people would have maybe reservations about Reece Nelson, you know, about what he can contribute. And you know, we've had the discussion about how much is he going to play, you know, when you consider who is ahead of him in the pecking order and will probably remain ahead of him in the pecking order. But is it the kind of deal that Arsenal maybe need to do in a summer where there's going to be a lot of expenditure, we're unsure of how much money is going to come in, and we still do need squad depth. We do need players who can come in and rotate for cup games and provide, you know, quality and cover, which I think he did to pretty good effect last season, even if the amount of minutes he played was quite small. Is this just sort of the easy way of doing that? Because you can't go out and buy for every position.
Well, exactly. You know, I think if you were to ask someone, well, who would you like instead of Nelson? There's a decent chance they'd list you a player who'd cost you 50 million quid. And Arsenal can't, that's not the choice Arsenal have. You know, that they're spending so much money already this summer. They probably haven't got the capacity to be like, well, we also like a winger, so can we have another 60 million quid for that? Only by selling players could they get to that sort of position. I think there are certain parallels with Eddie Nketiah 12 months ago. Academy player, homegrown player. Everything you eventually get on him will be considered profit. If you do turn him over and sell him in the market, better to do that at some point than lose him for free. But I think even saying that is a bit of a disservice, because I think Mikel Arteta really believes that Reece Nelson can contribute. I don't think he's doing this thinking we've got to protect his value, we don't want to lose him for nothing. I genuinely think Arteta sees him as someone who can play a part in the group next season. I think he saw him as someone who could do that in the running and brought him on multiple times ahead of other players who you might have considered more established or more experienced.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with him. Let me ask you this one before we take a little break and go into part two and do some more questions.
Okay.
We had a number of questions about this this person who retired this week from football. KP on the Discord. I know not everyone holds Cesc in high regard, but personally, I loved him and believe him to be one of our best ever players, certainly in the Emirates era. Where do you think he ranks in Arsenal history or just the Emirates era? And Jay Mart says, good evening, gents. What are your favourite memories of Cesc Fabregas in an Arsenal shirt?
Favourite memories. I was there for Cesc's debut when he played against Rotherham.
Wearing 57. Was that
number
right?
57 on the back of his shirt. I think he was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even younger. Let's have a look. Cesc Fabregas, Rotherham. I think
he was 16, wasn't he?
We better check it. I mean, I think he came over at 15, but maybe, yeah, the debut was at 16. Here we go, Arsenal.com, youngest gunner, 16 years and 177 days. And I just remember the kind of how extraordinary that was. And you've got to remember, this was now, that was 20 years ago. So English football, although it had begun to evolve and be quite exciting, playing against a team like Rotherham, you know, they were very much adult men and quite physical in their approach. And he was a child, basically. And it wasn't that he was spectacular, but he looked absolutely comfortable in that setting and that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that age, to be doing that is extraordinary. And, you know, actually a lot of the time people want to see teenagers when they play make like an amazing impact, or and Cess would do that before long. But I think even being able to kind of hang and cope and survive in that conditions, under that spotlight, playing against experienced players at that sort of age is in itself incredibly impressive. So
yeah, I mean,
I remember that very well.
When you think about the team that he came into,
yeah,
think about that team and think about those players and think about how young he was and how, as you say, just incredibly comfortable and on the level, on the same level as those guys. You know, and I'm not saying he was better than, you know, certain players or whatever, but, you know, he was there and he was playing with Patrick Vieira. He was playing with Gilberto Silva. He was playing with Edu. He was playing with Ray Parler, Pires, Ljungberg, Thierry Henry, Dennis. But, you know, it's extraordinary now to think of a player of that age coming into a team of that quality and just, you know, adding to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's unbelievable.
And then I remember, you know, the following summer, it was the Community Shield, and Cesc had been like quite involved in pre-season, and he started the Community Shield, age 17, against Manchester United. Arsenal won really convincingly, won 3-1. And that, I think, was the origin of the, he's only 17, he's better than Roy Keane, because Roy Keane was his opposite number, you know, for Manchester United that day. And Cesc absolutely bossed it, which, you know,
yeah.
From then on, it was kind of strength to strength. I mean, I know you've got a soft spot for the Spurs goal, right?
Oh, well, who doesn't? Who doesn't have a soft spot for that goal? I was at that game, so I remember it really well, still celebrating the first goal, and it went through. He went through and scored that. I mean, some amazing goals, amazing passes, you know. I just really, really loved him as a player, and I don't, you know, need to get into what happened next and all the rest of it. You know, people can think whatever they want. They can hold their own opinions. I just absolutely loved him. I think one of my favorite moments as well was the night Aaron Ramsey had his leg broken.
Mm.
And there was a bit of back and forth between him. Did he score the third goal or did he set up the third goal? I think we won 3-1. I think
he maybe scored.
Maybe he scored that goal. Like really late in the game in injury time to make it safe. And he ran up the touchline going shh to Tony Pulis. And I fucking loved that. Because he did have a bit of edge to him. He had a bit of spike to him, you know? Like all the best players. He had a bit of that to him, even at a very young age, and he took on a lot of responsibility for someone of his age as well.
He scored a penalty that day to give Arsenal the lead, and then his shot was parried out for Vermaelen to get the
lead. Vermaelen, that's who it was. Yeah.
But so many moments. I think the goal in Milan.
Mm-hmm.
The hug on the touchline with Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
I was at White Hart Lane when he absolutely smashed one into the top corner.
Oh, yeah.
The game with two screamers, one from him and
one from Adebayor. Yeah.
Countless memories. And it's interesting, his legacy for some is tainted. I mean, I was even thinking about this with reference to Declan Rice, because, you know, you would think, came through at West Ham, been club captain, helped him to a European trophy, wants to pursue his ambitions. You would kind of think that they're getting £105 million potentially for him. You'd think the West Ham fans would largely be kind of at peace and cool with that. But even he's been on the end of quite a lot of stick, I gather, from West Ham supporters.
And it's just the way of football fans, isn't it? That, you know, we're loyal to one club and one club alone. And, you know, I think the older you get, the more you understand it's a job for them, and it's a precarious job at times. You know, I think they're obviously extremely well paid and all the rest of it. But if a football club wants rid of you, football club will get rid of you in no uncertain terms. You know, they'll pay you loads of money and make you go somewhere else. But you know what I mean? I think it's just the way of football fans that we can be quite an unforgiving bunch. And, you know, there are obviously some, we all have our favorites and players we don't like and scenarios that we don't like and all the rest of it. But yeah. You know, I just thought he was a really amazing football player, and I was, you know, privileged to watch him at Arsenal for not as long as I would have liked, but for as long as we did.
You know, something Arsenal have done better and done more of in recent years is kind of keeping players, ex-players, involved and connected with the club, or bringing them back into the fold. And obviously, I know he's done some of his coaching badges at London Colney, working with the academy sides. What's your hunch? Do you think that Cesc is someone who could have a part to play at Arsenal in the future?
Don't know. I don't know about Arsenal. I mean, he clearly wants to be a coach or a manager. I think he's someone who thinks very intelligently about the game. Mm-hmm. When you see him doing his little bits of punditry, I know he hasn't done a great deal, but I always think he speaks quite well and talks about the game with real passion. Now, there's no guarantee that, you know, we've seen it before. Lots of great players want to move into coaching and management and don't quite make the grade. But I just have a sneaky feeling about him. I don't know where exactly he's going to end up, but I think he's smart enough and understands the game well enough that he's going to give it a good go anyway. It's all about opportunity and where maybe you land your first job or and where that takes you, how well you do, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think he's definitely going to stay in the game for a while, isn't he?
Yeah. And my gut feeling would be, sure, why not? I could see him back at Arsenal in some capacity. But then if you'd asked me, well, will Tony Adams be back at Arsenal as a coach one day? I would have said, sure, I'll put my house on it.
Yeah.
You know, and it hasn't happened. And Patrick Vieira, I'd say, oh, yeah, that's a sure thing. At some time, he'll be back at Arsenal. Well, so far, it's not happened. Things can appear predestined, and in this very unpredictable world of football, it doesn't ultimately mean that.
No. Did I see Vieira's got a new job? Is it with Strasbourg?
I believe.
Right.
Who are, of course, the second club in the Chelsea owners' multi-club model, I believe.
That's a podcast in the making, I think, this multi-club thing. I don't know that that's really a positive development for football. I think it's open to, I think there's people we could talk to about that, I think, who would be more have greater expertise on it than I do right now, but it doesn't quite sit right with me. You know, I know Man City have got all their clubs and all the rest of it, but I think it's iffy. I did see a big piece actually on Yossimar that Philippe Auclair has just put out about a private investors group in the US called 777 who've bought quite a number of football clubs. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but as ever with Philippe stuff, I'm sure it's very well investigated. So I look forward to having a go at that. Will we take a break?
Let's do this.
Okay.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two, where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter, which might work or might not work.
You tried to send to us on Twitter.
We don't know. I mean, maybe you did. Maybe some of the ones we're seeing are real. Maybe they're not real. Who knows what we're getting? But at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog. But definitely on the Discord, which you get access to if you're an Arsblog member on Patreon. You can do that by signing up at patreon.com/Arsblog. Do you want to have a crack at the question? Do you want to have a crack at a first question in this part?
Why not? This question is from KT on the Discord. A name which is sort of suspicious when you hear the content of the question.
Okay.
Last summer, no one saw Kieran Tierney falling out of favour the way that he did, even with the arrival of Zinchenko. It's impossible for me to not imagine that this question has been written by Kieran Tierney. But there you go.
Do it in a Scottish accent. Go on. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, I won't. Because we have got some Scottish listeners and we wish to retain them.
Yes.
Okay. Do you foresee... any such surprises next year where one of our key players from last season falls out of favour due to an evolution within the team?
Well, Kieran, it's a great question.
First of all, we're sorry about what's happened. Darwin's got a lot to apologise for.
I mean,
things keep evolving.
It is possible, but I don't quite know what it's going to be. You know, you know, there are certain things that are happening in terms of arrivals that are going to rejig the team and change the way we play slightly. And I think that's necessary as well. You don't just want to do what you did last season because everyone's kind of wise to that. So you do need some tactical variation or flexibility. But exactly what that might be, I'm not 100% sure. Just thinking about players coming in, and I do have a question about Timber, which might be sort of related to this. So let me just ask it, because it is in this kind of ballpark. It comes from Johnny B. AFC on the Discord. He said, "Good evening, gents. With the likely, and it could be announced by the time you record, hasn't been, the arrival of Timber, what do you think the impact, if any, will be on Ben White? It would be unusual for Mikel Arteta to pay such a sum for a defender and not use him frequently. And from what I've seen of him, he looks very exciting. But where and when does he play? It feels a little out there, as Ben White has been such a revelation there with his link up with Saka and was one of the standout performers of the past year." What do you think of that?
Well, I think I said, was it last week?
Yeah.
You know, I have a sneaky feeling that Timber could be a starter by the end of next season. And I say that as someone who really, really thinks Ben White is an excellent player. So in answer to the first question, who could be the Tierney of this year? I don't think it would be the same for Ben White. I don't think the team is going to evolve dramatically in some way that suits Timber much more than White. I just think that he is proper competition. To the extent that I don't think there's a great deal between them. But, you know, the second question said it's rare for a Mikel Arteta to spend that much money on a defender without starting them. Well, he spent even more money on Ben White. So I just think it provides options. You know, in the same way that City at times have had, you know, a multitude of defenders, some who they could use at centre-back, some they could use at right-back, left-back. I'm thinking of times they played sort of Nathan Ake or Laporte even at full-back. I just think that's how Arteta will look upon it. Yeah. He'll look upon it as more of a pool of players to select from than, you know, a clear first choice.
Yeah, we've got to start thinking more of a squad than a team, you know? So that would be the way I would think of that when it comes to Ben White and Jurrien Timber. I did a bit of watching of him, actually, after you spoke about him in such glowing terms last week. And
you thought he was crap?
No, I thought he was like, ooh, this guy looks good.
He does look very good.
He does, yeah. There are a lot of qualities in the bits that I saw that I was going, oh, I can see why Mikel Arteta likes him. I was on Y Scout doing it. Obviously, we have a new player podcast. For every new signing that we make, we have those over on Patreon. And in preparation for that one, I was looking at his stats and looking at clips of him, and he looks a very, very good player, even though he's played primarily as a centre-half for Ajax. Looking at how he plays and what he does, and particularly what he does with the ball and ball progression, whether that's with passing or how he carries the ball, I think he's there for the right-hand side, you know? I think that's what it is. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what he brings to the team. And look, I think Ben White is an amazing player. I really love watching him. But I also think that there are times where, you know, you do need to manage the minutes of very good players. Like, they will give you, I think, you know, Ben White has given us a lot in the 2 years that he's been here. But if I was to suggest that towards the end of each season, he probably wasn't at 100%, I don't think that's doing him any disservice. It's simply a reflection of how much he's had to play without the necessary sort of backup / competition. So This solves that problem, I think.
And both Timber and White can play centre-half. You know, Saliba and Gabriel, we know they're an excellent partnership. And obviously the Saliba injury cost us dear, but we have to remember those two did play pretty much every game up until that point. Certainly in the Premier League, they were really consistent in terms of how much football they played. I'm not saying that fed into the Saliba injury, but you know, I think the more games we play, the more we're going to need to occasionally mix it up, and these guys help us do that. I also think that Timber, we talk about him as a defender, and we talk about him as a right back, and that is what he is. But in terms of how he affects the way we play and what the job he can do for us, you know, when we talk about maybe losing Thomas Partey from the midfield, I think in the same way that Zinchenko is someone who ostensibly played at left back but made us stronger in midfield, I think Timber absolutely has the potential to do that from the right-hand side.
Mm.
His ability on the ball is that of a midfield player, and he's so comfortable kind of tucking in field and operating in those spaces. So, yeah, he is obviously kind of the least maybe known in this country. He's obviously come from outside the Premier League, unlike Havertz and Rice of our three signings. But I'm very, very, very keen to see him in action and see how he gets on.
I enjoyed this question from Shaka Laka on the Discord. It goes like this. With the hopefully imminent arrival of Timber, what does this mean for our rip-roaring fullback Cedric? I'm by no means calling Timber not good-looking, but getting rid of beefcakes like Pablo Marie, Xhaka, in one window, does this just mount more pressure on our club captain and manager as good-looking bastards?
A lot to digest there.
There is, yeah. I don't need the answer. I just wanted to read that out because I just enjoy that stream of consciousness. Like, he started asking about, what would Timber mean for Cedric? And then it's like, hey, wait a minute. We're not as handsome as we used to be. Maybe we've got to get some...
We've given Cedric a lot of time on this show. Are we a bit less handsome? Perhaps. That is something we may need to address in what remains of the window.
Still loads of time. Loads of time.
Yeah, that's true. Eugene Krabs, who I hope I've written that down right. I took the unusual step of writing down people's names today. I've gone analog.
He's from Cockermouth, by the way.
Ah, that makes sense. Says, morning. Where is he writing from? Assuming Balogun goes, what is your... Sorry. I'd make a real hash of this. Right. Morning. Assuming Balogun goes, who is your second choice striker if Gabriel Jesus doesn't start? I guess the options are Eddie, Trossard, Havertz and Martinelli at a push. For what it's worth, I feel somewhere between meh and okay about those options.
I mean, the obvious one, I think, is Eddie, just because we gave him a deal. He's got the number 14 shirt, and he is a striker, and he has, you know, started up top for us quite a lot. Trossard was good when he played there. What are the other options? Martinelli?
Havertz.
Havertz. I mean, I don't think we've signed Havertz from Chelsea, where he was playing as a striker and having a terrible time, to play him as a striker here. I think the plan for him is different. You know, he can do it.
Let's say he's playing midfield. I think what we know about Arteta is he does like to sort of disrupt as few units as he possibly can. So if Havertz is part of our regular midfield and Jesus doesn't play, I think he'd rather draft someone else in than shift a player who he sort of considers integral to the structure or the shape.
So I think I kind of feel a little bit the same as Eugene there. Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
A bit.
But could be better. It could be better. I think Eddie will score you goals if he starts sufficient numbers of games. We've had the discussion about how he doesn't really score off the bench.
I just don't know if he will start that many games.
If Jesus is fit, he doesn't start.
Yeah, and for me, Trossard's ahead of Eddie in that pecking order. In terms of how he helped the fluidity of the team last season when he came in, his intelligence, his understanding of the sort of false nine kind of job that Jesus often does for us, I just think he makes the team better than Eddie does. What you're looking at, you're looking at lots of minutes off the bench, but his impact off the bench is sort of negligible, really.
I do think, you know, there is a bit of room for improvement in that area, but I don't know if it's realistically doable this summer because of what we're spending.
There's room for improvement, but I'm not sure there's masses of room, both in terms of numbers and in terms of money.
I mean, if you were to sell both Balogun and Nketiah, then you probably have sufficient funds for another striker. But you know, I'm just trying to think who else do the other teams have? Like after Haaland, it's what's his name, Alvarez.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and he's a good player.
Chelsea went and bought Nicholas Jackson this summer, and I think that's not a sure thing at all. For the centre forward position. Spurs have obviously got Kane and Richarlison. Manchester United don't really have a centre forward.
But they have Weghorst and they have Martial and they have Rashford who can play there. But I know what you're saying. One. Yeah.
They desperately need a quality one. Liverpool.
They have Darwin, but they're not. Yeah, they haven't been like a team that's been reliant on a centre forward for a lot of goals, you know?
That's true. I agree. There is room for improvement, but I think it would require both those strikers to go.
Which I think is a tall order, really.
Yeah.
Let me just mention this one. Paul Jacobs, who's at Jacobs_PR on Twitter, said, how can we agree terms with Rice before West Ham? Since when did agreeing personal terms with a player before having permission become normal? Isn't it tapping up? Not just Rice. Every rumoured link this summer includes a line about personal terms already agreed. And I just wanted to mention that in the context of the video you did last week. Which sort of explains the workings of a transfer that, you know, ostensibly, yes, it is tapping up, but that's just the way it works. And, you know, it's a very good watch on how transfers work. And across the summer, you've been doing really good stuff on the on your YouTube channel. So people get over to YouTube and subscribe to James on YouTube, and you get videos on various aspects of things that are going on. And some not behind the scenes kind of stuff, but the inner workings of the transfer market and bits and bobs. So they're well worth a watch.
There's some behind the scenes of my house, you know, and various houses in which I'm staying. You see, you know, a bit of behind the scenes there.
Yes.
But mainly just transfer. But that one is good, the one about how transfers work. And that is one of the points we talk about, kind of the chronology of how these things happen. And the question's absolutely right. Technically, if you want to go to court over it, it probably is tapping up.
Don't tell West Ham that now.
No. And I think, to be fair, in that situation in particular, everyone has been very aware for some time that Declan Rice would be going this summer. I mean, he turned down a very lucrative contract with West Ham because that was his intention. And I guess ultimately what you've got to say is, like, you know, West Ham are going to get a lot of money here an awful lot of money that's going to be incredibly useful to them. I don't think they want to sort of upset that apple cart by lodging a complaint with the FA.
Mm.
And also, every deal West Ham are doing this summer to bring someone in probably involves a similar degree of, you know, inverted commas, tapping up.
Yeah.
It's the way of the world. And it's partly why intermediaries and third parties exist, to give everyone involved plausible deniability.
Mm.
You know, I didn't sit down with X player. I just happened to meet someone who represents them and many other players. It's pure coincidence.
How was I to know after phoning him up and arranging a coffee that he was so
involved? The father of Declan Rice would be his representative. I mean, it's just the culture of it. But it, you know, when it happens to our players, we are furious. I mean, we all remember Ashley Cole and Chelsea and that row. I mean, that was a bit, what's the word? Flagrant?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the context of that was a lot different. You know, West Ham would have been fully aware that that Declan Rice wanted to leave, and you know, they know how the transfer market works. But yeah, that was certainly a different one. Let me ask you this one. Matt Randolph, who's at Vidigal73 on Twitter, says, "We put in huge bids for Rafinha and Mudryk in the previous two windows. It was clear we were seriously pursuing a pacey, direct, wide forward to compete with our existing options. Do you think that has changed, or will we look to sign one before the window closes?"
I think that's a great question, because it was something that was on the agenda last summer, but we kind of didn't quite get to it. You know, in the final weeks of the summer window, we prioritised a defensive midfielder over someone like Mudryk.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up getting neither. Then obviously went very, very, very hard for Mudryk in January to the tune of 100 million euros. Didn't get him. Got Trossard, who is, I think, a different type of player, but who has done superbly, really, since he came in. And we're not seeing rumours about another kind of flying winger. And we've since extended Rhys Nelson's contract. We look like we are intent on keeping Emile Smith Rowe. We still have Martinelli and Saka.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Gabriel Jesus, who can play there if required. And that 100 million that we had reserved for Mudryk has been, I would imagine, otherwise deployed. I don't think it's like we've done £200 million worth, or about to do £200 million worth of business this summer, but we still got the 100 million we had for Mudryk tucked away in a back pocket.
Don't think so.
I think that resource has been allocated differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because Arteta has been sufficiently encouraged by Trossard and Nelson and maybe Smith Rowe to mean he's probably going to stick with what he's got there for now.
Let me ask you a follow-up question then from Emil A239.
Do you agree, Andrew, first? Or do you think we could do it?
I think we really need to sell very well. You know, we're going to splash out 200 million. We spent, what did we spend in January? 50 million? In January, we spent how much last summer? Like Jesus, Zinchenko, Vieira, you know, another 110 thereabouts. You know, it's a lot of money.
50 or so the summer before, wasn't it?
You know, big money the summer before as well, on all the players, on Ben White, Tomiyasu, Ramsdale, et cetera, et cetera. So I think other things that we do this summer are going to be highly dependent on what we can bring in. How much we can sell. If only we had a goalkeeper from Cockermouth. They're very valuable, it seems.
It seems so. So what was your follow-up question?
Follow-up question was from Emil A239, who said, "Who will be Saka's backup when the new season starts? Nelson? Havertz? Another new signing? Or, like last season, no one at all?"
He can't possibly play all the games. He's going to play a lot of games, but he can't possibly play them all.
Mm.
I have to imagine it's going to be... I don't think Trossard can really play on the right, to be honest with you.
No.
He's all right on the left. I think he's good through the middle. I've not seen him really do it on the right-hand side.
I mean, he can, and he has played there a bit, but I understand what you're saying about...
It hasn't worked when he's done it at Arsenal particularly well.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Smith Rowe play there for years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
He did it as a kid a fair bit. I remember him doing it under Unai Emery in the first team. We've seen Vieira play there pretty unsuccessfully. So I think it's going to be between Nelson and Jesus. I think they're the two that I would look at as being the most apt to fill in for him. What do you think?
I mean, Nelson came on for him when he got injured that time against Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
Nelson scored a couple of goals and he came on for him. So, I mean, he does fit the bill. But, you know, Mikel Arteta likes what he likes, and I think he likes having a left-footed player in that position.
Saying Pepe Remontada.
Not quite. But yeah, maybe it'll be Nelson. I mean, Havertz played there and has played there quite a bit, not just for Chelsea, but played there for Leverkusen a bit as well. So
that just seems like such a different.
Yeah. Thing. But you know, left-footed player. That's all I got.
Right.
So I guess we wait and see. One of those we'll have to just wait and see.
Yeah. Could Martinelli play there? Maybe.
Has done. Scored that goal against Newcastle, was it? A little ball over the top from Tomiyasu and a lovely finish. So he has played there and done okay there, so it's possible.
I prefer Martinelli out there to Trossard, just on sort of pure gut feeling. This is a non-Arsenal question.
Mm-hmm.
But... where is it? Just curious. I had it, Andrew. It's from Johnny at Fruit All Sorts. Hi, Johnny. Johnny was the man, I believe, who wrote the lyrics to Fuck Magpies Forever.
Yep, that's the guy.
So he's got a special place in my heart. He says, evening, gentlemen. Curiosity more than anything. What teams from other leagues have a soft spot in your hearts? For example, I keep an eye out for Hibs, AFC Wimbledon and St. Pauli. I know, hipster. And why, if you can be bothered? Do you have one, Andrew?
Not really.
No?
Not really. I mean, I used to go to Barcelona a bit when I lived there. But there's too much has gone on between us and Barcelona for me to have a soft spot. Soft spot for the city, not necessarily the football team. I remember when lockdown happened and football came back in Germany, I think, a good few weeks before the Premier League came back. And I remember saying, you know what, I'll pick a team in the Bundesliga and I'll, you know, watch them and I'll get my football fixed that way. And I picked Union Berlin.
Okay.
And I just couldn't give a fuck. I just couldn't fake it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, it's a boring answer, but I, you know, one club guy, what can I tell you? Wow. What about you?
True loyalty. I've got loads. I'm not as principled as you. local team. So, you know, I was born in Watford, opposite the stadium. I used to go and watch them in the days where I didn't have an Arsenal season ticket. I went to Watford quite a few times, saw them win a playoff final. Nick Wright scored an overhead kick. Beautiful scenes. It was always kind of magical and mad to me that Watford were in the Premier League. It sort of seemed insane. This is, you know, obviously pre-Pozzo and all that. But so they'd be up there. Boreham Wood, of course.
Yeah.
The local team where my family lived. And a little bit QPR. There's a lot of QPR in the family.
Right.
Again, they're sort of local-ish, but sort of harmless to me. they don't count them as sort of a perceived threat.
Sure.
so I can indulge.
I suppose the one club that might just fit the bill is Hull City.
I was going to ask, Carl.
Yeah, because I grew
did
up...
Did you ever get to go and watch Hull?
Yeah, we did. We went to... My dad used to bring me to watch Hull City when they were in the fourth division. Mm. I remember they had a goalkeeper called Tony Norman. I think he was, played for Wales. But there weren't too many people at those games. And you could hear him swearing at his defenders, which, you know, I was only a small child. My father was keen to keep me away from such language, but then don't bring your small child to a fucking football match.
How did that work out for him?
You know, yeah. Not very well. So I think a little bit Hull City, but obviously, you know, we had some moments.
You love Phil Brown, of course.
Phil Brown, yeah, of course. Who doesn't? Yeah, they sort of blotted their copybook a little bit, you know, during their Premier League era and all the rest of it. But that would be kind of it. Let me ask you this one then. JDH, who's at JDH_14. He says, good evening. Gabriel, 6'3". Saliba, 6'4". White, 6'1". Rice, 6'1". Havertz, 6'4". How important is this next year? As well as effectiveness on the pitch, our best teams won the game in the tunnel, in inverted commas, with their physical stature. Is this important in the modern game or not?
It is. It is important. Mm. And I actually think what I would say is go and look at the Man City squad. Because we think as Man City as this very, very technical team.
Mm-hmm.
But they are maybe more physical than they've ever been. I would say we are currently looking at the biggest Pep Guardiola team in terms of physical stature that there has ever been.
Mm. That's true. Because they used to be, you know, small guys at Barcelona with, you know, the occasional Busquets or Puyol. I mean, Puyol wasn't even that big. I know what you mean. But they are very physically imposing team as well as being technically incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Haaland is obviously kind of the cherry on the cake there, but look at Rodri or you know, the centre halves they've got. Even someone like Kevin De Bruyne, you know, he's got to be verging on 6 foot.
He is pretty
powerful with it. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're up against. I just think at the sort of sharp end of the Premier League, physicality is such a crucial component. So I don't think it's coincidence that we are bringing in height. And also you've got to look at, you know, in Xhaka, we're losing a player who is a 6 footer, decent in the air. We've got to atone for that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's no coincidence that we've got a big central defensive partnership. You know, those guys are good footballers, good defenders, but, you know, you're not knocking them over. There's very few players in the Premier League who are going to win a physical battle against Gabriel or William Saliba. Maybe Haaland is about the only one, mm-hmm. you know? But I think as well, there's some basic things that you need in a team, you know, when you're setting up a team defensively, defending set pieces, having height in your penalty area is a good thing. You know, you don't have to be the biggest guy in the world to be a good header of the ball, but, you know, there are other teams who are going to use their physicality as well. You have to be able to match them physically as well as technically. So, yeah, I think it is really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, AFC Brady mm-hmm. on Discord says, assuming Rice and Timber deals go through, I think that is a fair assumption.
Mm-hmm.
Can we consider this Arsenal's best transfer window of the Emirates era? I know there is still plenty of time for more. Comings and outgoings will be another key element. But with the players we brought in and the current players we have extended, I believe it just might be the best to date.
Hmm.
Interesting. I mean, obviously the signings are one thing, but if you couple that with, if we count the Bukayo Saka extension, could see a William Saliba extension in this summer as yeah. well. Reece Nelson, let's not leave him out. Would it be up there?
I mean, obviously we have to see how it works out. I mean,
that's the thing. It's very difficult to assess a window purely on the business done.
And especially in July, you know, especially in July. I mean, what you would say is you can't fault the ambition of what we've done so far, what we've, you know, been trying to do for months and months and months, you know, is to put in place this plan that we have, you know, to bring in the West Ham captain, to bring in Havertz, to bring in Timber. You know, these are not things we just decided to do at the start of the summer. They've been in motion for quite a while. So on that basis, I think you can say it's very impressive. What I would say, though, and we've maybe talked about this, is that I do think that this window is a double glazed, shall we say, because we have to sell well. For this to be a good window for Arsenal, like, we can improve the team for sure, but for it to be a really good window, I think we've got to sell well also, because that's been a problem. And if we don't see some improvement in that regard, I think it's reasonable to question that, because we do have players who are now more valuable assets and more coveted by other clubs than at any time I can think of in the last 5 or 6 years. You know, even our best players, other clubs didn't really want them. You know, the Alexis thing, maybe. But beyond that, you know?
Well, even when they did.
Yeah, we just got a crappy Mickey. So, yeah, I think that's how you judge this window. Obviously, at the end of it, hopefully the players do well. But, you know, you've got to look at the sums and see who's here and who's not here and how much they've gone for. And, crucially, what that might enable us to do. So,
yeah. It is amazing football. I tweeted something the other day, something like, you know, wow, if Arsenal get three of their major targets over the line, effectively over the line, sort of around the start of July, that's incredibly good going, very efficient, very impressive, very ambitious. I would say 90% of the replies were kind of like, yeah, what else are we going to do? Who else are we going to buy? Mm. Who else are we going to bring in?
You know what your mistake was there?
Huh?
You know what your mistake was?
Was.
Tweeting.
What? Tweeting. Yeah. Well, I tweeted at a time when people could still see tweets. That was also a mistake. But it is interesting, right? There is just a kind of endless avaricious appetite for more.
Sure.
And, you know, you get stuff done early in the window. Well, it leaves you lots of time to do other things. I think you make a great point about the sales. And the sales and the incomings and any more, I think, prospective incomings are probably very linked.
Mm.
I think unless we sell players, I struggle to see lots of spots for us to bring people in.
Sure.
It's been a very good window. It's funny. I do think that in the kind of fullness of time, when we're talking about this sort of 10 years on, personally, I think the window of not last summer, but the summer before will always be remembered as a kind of critical reset point for the club.
Kickstart, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that was when they did 5 players under 23 and under, right? And it's not like all those deals have been roaring successes. I mean, you know, Tavares, pretty much a mixed bag. Sami Lukonga, the same. Tomiyasu's had a lot of injuries. White and Ramsdale have been more consistently involved.
Odegaard's been fucking amazing.
And Odegaard's been brilliant. So it wasn't perfect, but it was... Sorry, it's 6 players, not 5. That's correct. It was a huge kind of reset point and a turning point for the club, and sent a very, very clear message to us all about we're changing what we're doing and we're changing the way we're going about it. So that will always sort of hold a special significance, I think, for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Hopefully extra special because the journey ends in glory.
I like this one from BostonGooner77 on the Discord. Are either of you worried about a clear flaw in our transfer strategy? The lack of any incoming Gabby or Gabrielles?
a guy stopped me in the street that they'd say, like, he loved the pod and his name was Gabrielle. And I just thought, I think he said Gabriel, to be fair. But
yeah,
that, if you're an Arsenal fan these days and your name's Gabriel, I mean...
You're changing, aren't you? No, it's Gabriel. It's always been Gabriel.
You're turning up at the training ground asking for a contract as well.
Yeah, yeah. You get
it's
one.
A big part of the recruitment strategy. No, I mean, there's a Gabby Vega on the market, isn't there, that a couple of clubs are looking at, Chelsea and Man City, I think. But a Gabriel, not seen one. Maybe it's just become too confusing. You know what I mean? Because it's had to draw a line.
Yeah.
I need it to be clearer who I'm talking to.
Just get me a fucking Mike or a Steve, will you?
I need a Steve.
Fucking
I'll
hell.
I'll pay whatever it takes for Steve.
You've got a Declan.
Got a Declan. That's nice. That's unusual these days.
Do you know what? Do you want my Declan story?
Of course.
My second name is Declan.
It's all coming out now.
It is, yeah. The prophecy is being fulfilled. But, my dad...
Is that your saint's name? Is that a thing?
No, the saint's name is when you take a name for your confirmation.
Right, okay.
But I was originally going to be called Declan. And my father was a little unsure of how the name would go down in England when, you know, we were living there. This was 1971, so he switched it around.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Do you feel like a Declan?
I don't
see you as a Declan, to be honest. I think you made the right call.
I think so.
Obviously, he exposed you to way too much swearing, but on the name front,
yeah,
he did all right.
Yeah, I did all right. But you know, I'm. It's nice to have a good Irish Declan in the team. You know,
I'm just trying to think of a Steve we could sign. Unai tried, of course, with Nzonzi. Maybe Edu can find a Brazilian prodigy.
Just call Steve.
Steve. He just wears Steve on the back of his shirt.
Yeah. He plays for Flamengo.
In a world where there's been a Fred, anything is possible.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. Let's do this one. AS 37 Gunnar. He said, gents, I recently watched a film at a Vue Cinema. VUE. Is that a cinema chain in the UK?
Do you have that in the Ireland? It used to be Warner Brothers.
Right.
Cinemas. I don't know what happened. It changed. Well, rebranded.
Okay. Rebranded, like lots of stuff. And he said, much to my satisfaction, following the announcement to put away phones, the announcer said, let's do this in exactly the way that James does. Have they copied James? Did James copy them? Is it a coincidence? Either way, I crack on with the copywriting.
Wow, we need to get the lawyers to work. I haven't been to a Vue Cinema for many years. There's one in Islington, not far from the ground.
Okay,
but I've not been there for some time, so I've not heard that. I imagine that since the kind of popularity of Les Dudis has taken off, I imagine Vue have taken steps to kind of implement that in their presentation. They're piggybacking on my success.
I've just noticed that we do have Vue Cinemas here in Dublin.
Well,
there's one in...
Have I got a job for you?
Yeah.
Get in there and see if they're trying to rip me off.
I don't like the cinema though, really. You know, it's too many people. All sitting there eating and shit.
The screen's so big.
I know. there's one in Clondalkin, there's one in Limerick, one in Blanchardstown, in Coolock. We have a number of Vue Cinemas.
Sand, Andrew. Open your eyes. There's Vue Cinemas everywhere.
Wow. I'd never even noticed.
Well, I don't know. They haven't, I'll say this. They haven't contacted me about the use of Les Dudis. I've received no correspondence or income from their use of Les Dudis. Other listeners, should you go to the cinema, report back, let us know.
I didn't know they had announcers in the cinema either. I thought
it's just like, surely pre-recorded. He's not doing it live, is he?
Surely they don't have, you know, their own DJ Peter in the booth before every film.
No, it's a pre-recorded.
It's a pre-recorded thing.
We'll have to send a correspondent out.
Right.
To find someone to go behind enemy lines.
If anyone's in the Vue Cinema, he doesn't say which Vue Cinema he was in either, Maybe we can ask him on the Discord and find out.
I think they're all operating in the same way. It's a chain.
Yeah.
Get in there. Go and find out. Are they infringing on our copyright?
Right. Right.
Paul, having Paul from Master Vision do it is bad enough.
And he certainly gets into it. He does it with gusto.
You mentioned my YouTube channel.
Yes.
Half the comments, because I say let's do this sometimes in the videos, half the comments are people saying, why are you ripping off Paul's catchphrase? It's very irritating. But well, I'm sure me saying that will stop that happening.
Yes. You know, Paul is exactly the kind of guy who would stop doing something if he thought it was, causing mischief and mayhem. He's not that kind of guy.
No.
Right, last one, because we've got to get this podcast out. Thomas, who's at Smartly Done on Twitter. No, that's Smartly Done. He's got a number of Ys. He said, if you were both in charge of the Declan Rice announcement video, what would you do?
Massive box full of rice. With a ribbon around it. As discussed in part one.
Yeah. I'd just have him eat a bowl of pasta.
They'll never see it coming.
Yeah. Who's this?
I thought you wanted it to be a surprise, to be fair.
Felipe Pasta? Who's that guy?
Steve Pasta? Steve we Pasta. Signed Steve Pasta.
From Brazil?
Yeah, his name's Steve Pasta, but he goes by Steve.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Just Steve.
But he has Steve on the back of his shirt made out of pasta lettering, like a child would make.
I'm sure you can get a font for that these days.
Listen, we know we've already spoiled Granit Xhaka's departure video for everyone. I fear we shouldn't spoil the Declan Rice announcement video too.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sure they've got something cooked up for us that we will all enjoy.
Climbing out of a big bowl of kedgeree. scraping the boiled egg out from his hair.
Mmm, smoked haddock. Just what you need first thing in the morning.
Kedgeree, I don't even know where I plucked that. I've probably eaten about three times in my life. Right, well, there you go.
There you go. All right, well, look, it's all ahead of us this week. New signings, announcements, departure videos, welcome videos, Steve Pasta from Brazil. Just fucking look forward to it all. Enjoy your Christmas Eves, folks. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being with us. Hope you enjoyed the show a little later than usual. We will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.